As John mentioned in his opening remarks, the United States has a very broad array of interests in space, as does the rest of the international community. And one of the questions that really drove our study is whether or not United States policy has been doing a good job of balancing those interests, establishing a coherent and comprehensive policy, and then matching resources to accomplishing those policy objectives. The current administration now has two major reviews of space policy underway, one that it's initiated and that involves most of the major parts of the government that are interested in space doing an overall review of U.S. space policy, and another one that was actually initiated by Congress last year, a space posture review that has specifically the military and the intelligence communities looking at U.S. national security space posture. What I want to do today is to talk a little bit about the work that John Steinbruner and I did on U.S. space security policy and to leave you with some things to think about as those reviews are conducted and as the results are presented to Congress, and then Congress has to decide how to act on them as it exercises its oversight and funding responsibilities. I want to make three main points. First of all, that what I would call comprehensive U.S. military space dominance, the idea that it would be possible for the United States as the strongest space power in the world, if it were willing to spend enough money and work hard enough, to actually unilaterally control who can use space for what purposes, such that it would have complete freedom to use space however it wanted to. It could protect all of its own space assets, regardless of what anybody else tried to do to them, and it could prevent anybody else from using space in ways that were contrary to U.S. interests. That conception of what our policy should be seeking to do is neither feasible nor desirable. My second major point is that, therefore, we need a new guiding principle for our space security policy, and that that principle ought to be reassurance rather than deterrence. Thirdly, I want to argue that there are a number of concrete things that the United States can and should be doing in the coming year to show the rest of the world that we have fundamentally changed the basis for our space security policy in such a way that it's more compatible with all the other interests that we have in space. The Bush administration went to great lengths to portray its 2006 national space policy as being essentially the same as all previous U.S. administrations' approaches. But as we document in the monograph, the Bush administration's approach to space security really was the culmination of an effort that began during the Reagan administration to achieve a kind of comprehensive U.S. military space dominance for a competitive national advantage that stands in stark contrast to the fundamental approach used by the earlier administrations, the Eisenhower through Carter administration. They really recognized that space is a different environment, and that for reasons having to do with the basic laws of physics and the nature of the space environment, it's physically impossible to have the same level of military control in space that you could conceivably have on Earth or in the water if you were willing to spend the money necessary to do so. And therefore, they recognized that if they wanted to protect valuable U.S. space assets, and here they were particularly concerned with the reconnaissance satellites that played such a vital role during the Cold War, they needed to work out rules, particularly with the Soviet Union, about what kinds of military space activities were legitimate and deserving of protection, and they needed to exercise mutual restraint, particularly vis-a-vis the Soviet Union, that we, in effect, wouldn't target or interfere with their satellites if they didn't with ours, that we wouldn't station or use weapons in space if they did likewise. That really changed with the Reagan administration beginning to think of space first and foremost, not from the standpoint of stabilizing deterrence, but trying to gain advantage in a potential warfighting situation. And the whole concept of space dominance grows out of those roots of thinking about the fact that the United States might want to interfere with other countries' uses of space, that it might want to be able to attack other countries' satellites, that it might even want to station weapons in space at some point in the future, and that therefore it should put itself in a position, both legally and in terms of the capabilities that it develops, to do so. So one of the things that the monograph does is to look at the way the space dominance vision was described, particularly by the U.S. Air Force and U.S. By the Air Force Space Command and the U.S. Space Command, in terms of saying, okay, if we really wanted to protect all of our high-value space assets by having comprehensive space dominance, and if we wanted to be able to use space for all these transformational military purposes, what kinds of capabilities would we need? Okay. And then we go through and compare what the Bush administration actually did in terms of trying to acquire those capabilities. And what we show is that there's a huge gap between aspirations and actual accomplishments, even for an administration that was trying really as hard as it could to acquire or to put the path on the United States on the path of acquiring comprehensive space dominance. It was a whole lot easier for the United States to change its words, to change its declaratory policy, to change its organizational structure, to spend more money, to stop participating constructively in any way in arms control discussions dealing with space, than it was to actually build and deploy the capabilities that it said that it wanted to have. We then argued that for very, very basic reasons, even if some future administration tried as hard as the Bush administration did for a sustained period of time to acquire comprehensive space dominance, it wouldn't be feasible at any remotely reasonable cost for very fundamental reasons having to do with the nature of the space environment, the dysfunctionalities of the U.S. military space acquisition process, and the predictable reactions of other countries that simply don't want the United States to be in a position to threaten them for space or control how they can use space. And we would argue that an incomplete effort to achieve comprehensive military space dominance has actually been worse than nothing, that it's had a net negative effect not only on space security, but on all the other interests that the United States has in space. In particular, it's distorted spending patterns, it's impeded cooperation, and it stimulated other countries to work harder than they otherwise would have to emulate or offset U.S. military space capabilities, at the same time that it's undermined the diplomatic and legal mechanisms that the United States had developed for trying to manage all these complicated and potentially conflicting interests in space. Now, clearly, this has not been a productive way to do business. We need to change the guiding principles for our space security policy, and we hope that the policy reviews underway will produce a really fundamental reorientation, not just tinkering at the margins. But whereas I think most people do understand that the United States can't really monopolize space in the same way that, you know, for a very brief period of time, it had a monopoly on nuclear weapons, a lot of them don't understand that the logical alternative isn't to adopt the kind of deterrence that we practiced during the Cold War with the Soviet Union. The idea of shifting to a deterrence paradigm for space security is familiar because that's what we lived with for so long, but it's fundamentally inappropriate for space for a number of different reasons. First of all, we don't currently have the kind of intensely adversarial relationship with any other space power that we had with the Soviet Union, and it would be foolish to adopt a policy that assumes or even inadvertently encourages such a highly adversarial relationship to develop. And there are also a lot of features of the space security environment that would make deterrence much more difficult and more counterproductive in space than in the nuclear arena, such as the number and diversity of space users, the dual-use nature of most space technology, the difficulty of knowing who's doing what in space, for what reasons, and the fact that natural hazards and inadvertent man-made threats from things like debris or satellite collisions are actually a bigger, more immediate security problem than any type of deliberate attack. So our monograph really argues that reassurance, not dominance or deterrence, should be the guiding principle for U.S. space security policy. Now, the United States has made it very clear that it wants reassurance from China about how China is going to use its growing space capabilities. But we don't seem to understand that other countries want reassurance from the United States about how we intend to use our vastly more superior military space capabilities and our very high rates of spending. We can acquire those capabilities much faster than anybody else can. Everybody also wants reassurance that the other guy is going to be a responsible spacefaring nation, i.e. that they're not going to deliberately or recklessly do things that create debris or otherwise interfere with other countries' ability to use space safely and sustainably. But there are two, you know, basic facts that people understand in most areas of human relations, but they don't seem to apply here, which is that you can't expect meaningful reassurance from others if you're not willing to give it yourself. And since the United States has the most advanced space capabilities, it logically ought to be providing the most reassurance. And secondly, that reassurance has to be concrete and credible. It can't just be words if you want people to believe it. And that's particularly true if recent relationships have been characterized more by suspicion and mistrust than they have by cooperation. In terms of the practical policy implications of moving towards a reassurance-based approach to space security, let me start by observing that President Obama and members of Congress from both political parties have said that they want to repair the United States' image in the world and to reach out more effectively to other countries who can help us not only with immediate security problems, like the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the nonproliferation concerns about North Korea and Iran, but also with longer-term security problems, including what I would call the unjustifiable risks that we're still running by keeping very large nuclear arsenals ready to be used with short decision times, and the looming security threats from global warming. But the United States won't be able to accomplish any of these goals unless it takes substantial steps to address the security concerns of other countries. And changing our approach to space security is one thing that the United States can do relatively easily that would address perhaps the single biggest concern that other countries have, which is how the United States is going to develop and use its huge advantage in high-tech, precision, conventional weaponry, most of which is space-enabled. In terms of some near-term things that the United States should do to convey that reassurance, I would argue that an obvious first step would be for the President to countermand the anti-arms control principle in the 2006 National Space Policy without waiting for the new National Space Policy to be completed, because those revisions tend to take a lot longer than people expect. At the UN General Assembly meetings this fall, the United States should reaffirm its support for norms against stationing weapons in space or attacking other countries' satellites, so long as they are used in ways that are consistent with the 1967 Outer Space Treaty, and should encourage Russia and China to make parallel unilateral declarations, in effect to remind people that we haven't crossed these important thresholds yet, and we shouldn't do it in the future. As a concrete demonstration of this commitment, the United States should unequivocally rule out the development and deployment of space-based missile defense interceptors. Keeping this type of missile defense option makes no sense when it would be phenomenally expensive and technically very challenging compared with other missile defense options, and when the only reason to do space-based missile defense would be to neutralize China and Russia's retaliatory capabilities, which is exactly what we say we're not trying to do. The United States should initiate serious negotiations on core issues of space security with China, Russia, and other interested parties, either in the Conference on Disarmament or another appropriate forum. And it needs to make clear that it's interested in balanced proposals that take into account all the major spacefaring countries' security concerns, that it won't support either a proposal that deals, you know, only with weapons in space but doesn't have corresponding restraints on your ability to interfere with satellites, But in the same token, it can't put forward a proposal that deals only with debris-generating anti-satellite weapons and doesn't deal at all with other types of anti-satellite capabilities or with the question of what the satellites are doing in the first place. In terms of specific things that Congress can do, it should demand more transparency and trackability for U.S. military space spending, both as a necessary requirement for doing its own job and as a way to reassure other countries that U.S. spending patterns are consistent with a reassurance-based space security policy rather than a continued quest for space dominance. And finally, Congress should support the goal of making U.S. space relations with China no worse than those that the United States has with Russia or any other major spacefaring nation. If we want to be able to advance in a number of areas where we need international cooperation with space, then we have to be able to deal with one of the other major players as a normal country and not completely stigmatize it. So, you know, I think the next speakers will deal with these issues in more detail, but hopefully that gives you a flavor of the broad set of issues that the monograph addresses.